SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about sex trafficking. It can and it is happening in your community here in the D.C. metro area. My guests are Denise McCain, Executive Director of the Family Justice Center in Prince George's County, and Stacey Reimer, Founder and Executive Director of the Amara Legal Center, also in Prince George's County. If you have a question, if you have a comment, call us at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Can you give me, Denise, a thumbnail sketch of exactly what the Family Justice Center does?
Absolutely. Well, we're really very proud of this new resource in Prince George's County. It is an initiative of the Circuit Court under the authority of the Honorable Sheila Tillerson Addison. This is really a very innovative, newer model. It's a multi-agency, multidisciplinary collaborative that's comprised of 23 nonprofit private organizations, along with public government organizations, that have really come together, all co-located under one roof, to provide very comprehensive services to survivors of domestic violence.
Like what?
Sexual assault, so human trafficking, since we're talking about that, and elder abuse. So, for instance, when we think about the system, we know that if you are a survivor of domestic violence or human trafficking, you are oftentimes forced to navigate a very complicated system, having to speak to 5, 6, 7 people, constantly retelling your story, which can be re-victimizing in and of itself. The way we do things at the Family Justice Center, we've basically simplified that process by bringing everyone together. So, for example, if you are a survivor, you decide that you want to seek criminal charges or you want a protective order, the police are there. Prince George's County Police Department, the Sheriff's Office is there. State's Attorney's Office is there. Many survivors choose not to go the criminal justice route. They just want help. They just want information. So we have 19 private nonprofit organizations that are there, including Department of Social Services, governmental agencies. So this makes it more holistic. We enable people to come in, get the help that they need in a very safe environment where they have the confidentiality and they're working with people that are dedicated to this. So it's a new model, but it's been proven to be a best practice, and it really makes the process more efficient, more effective, and quite frankly, efficacious for someone who's been traumatized.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about sex trafficking tonight. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Let's go to Mike calling from Virginia. Mike, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, Harold, I'd just like to say that in the case of Stephanie's story, what I would like to see happen is that these sex traffickers, I don't think they should be let off the hook so easily. I think that they need to have something more than just a misdemeanor. They should actually be serving some time in jail. Because what happens is these guys go to jail for 3 months or so. They get back out, and they continue to do the same thing. And they're not being followed as, like, a sex offender would be followed. You know, they're told to be registered. Something needs to be put in place or implemented to where, you know, these guys are actually stopped.
Okay. Mike, thank you so much. Stacey, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we do need are more resources. We need more resources for our law enforcement officers to get out there and do more complex investigations. A lot of times right now what they're doing are sting operations. And in those sting operations, law enforcement officers are posing as buyers. And in the process, they are arresting the young women that are being victimized, but the traffickers are nowhere to be found. And so we really do need more resources and a more sophisticated approach to the issue. And secondly, I do agree, yes, they should be made to register as sex offenders. It's something that doesn't, honestly, I haven't seen that happen in a case. And you bring up a very good point.
When Stephanie was here earlier today, you know, fine young woman, obviously, you know, mature and was very, very, you know, calm and direct when she was explaining what she went through. But you said that she was a client. This has been an ordeal. What was she like when you first met her, when she first came to the legal center?
You know, honestly, she's always been, she's got a great head on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. She is, she's someone who's extremely motivated. And she's one of those people that I just absolutely know that she's going to succeed in life. But when she came to me, she was very afraid. And the thing that she was most afraid of was this criminal charge hanging over her head. She was so afraid that she would be made to go to jail. And, you know, it is just absolutely ridiculous that as a society, we would allow something like that to happen. Thankfully, she did not go to jail. But that fear was just absolutely paralyzing to her.
That's one of the reasons why she's not here now, because even though that's not her real name and we've done our best to protect her identity, there is still discomfort.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wanted to revisit the point about the laws. And I do also agree with the caller that we really should see more happening to traffickers. But, and sure, you can talk about this as well. But, you know, I think we are in a place, in a society where this is still a relatively new issue.
Absolutely.
Even though I think on the federal side, there have been laws that have been in place for centuries, or at least since the 1900s, we are just now coming to a place here within our states where we're finding that there are anti-trafficking laws, but they have not yet really caught up with the crime itself. And I don't think that the proper, whether it be case law or remedies, are there for the courts to properly even utilize what's available to get those types of charges. So I think we have a long way to go. There are significant gaps and limitations with the laws that exist. And states are really, I think, behind the curve and just really trying to catch up to what's happening.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about sex trafficking tonight. Karen, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi. I work in social services, and over the last couple of years here in Northern Virginia, we've seen an increase in the young ladies who've been caught and violated by sex trafficking. And it's just been very heart-wrenching. You know, they need so much in the way of treatment services, just to help them reach a place of being back to normal, if that's possible. And as, you know, the other caller said, and as you all have been talking about, the laws are horrible in terms of punishing the trafficker. Here in Virginia, many of the laws just kind of hang their hat on some existing laws to try to get something, and then the young ladies are penalized, you know, they're arrested. So there just needs to be such a drastic change in how this whole issue is addressed, both treatment-wise and in terms of punishment on the legal side.
Karen, thank you so much.
I would just say I think it's interesting that you had a caller from the Department of Social Services, which oversees foster care in most states. And I think one of the things that listeners should be aware of is that young girls in particular, while boys are also trafficked, it's predominantly young girls, those who are in foster or group homes are at a greater risk, particularly when they're leaving because they don't really have a place to go or they're more vulnerable. And it's not surprising to hear her say that she's finding that there's a much higher increase of girls. Are you finding that as well?
Absolutely. A lot of our clients have been in the foster care system. Actually, Stephanie, her story also.
Exactly. That's where she started, actually. Yeah.
Absolutely. And they are just so much more vulnerable. And I think it was interesting what Karen said about how they do need a lot of different types of services. That's what I'm finding, too. As a lawyer, I can provide, you know, one piece of the puzzle, basically. I can provide legal services. They also need housing. They need, food, clothing. They need counseling, educational services, job readiness training. There is a list of things that these individuals are in need of.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about sex trafficking tonight. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. Wendy, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
Doing just fine, thanks.
I am calling. I work in the public school system as a school counselor. And, you know, just listening to the story and everyone's comments, you know, we have to start thinking about, you know, what we can do now about educating our girls, young girls. Those middle school years are hard enough as it is. And, you know, I think we have to find a way and step up and create something to prevent the next hundreds of girls that this happens to, because to wait for laws as well as technology is ever changing, and if this is just the beginning in the federal system, we have to start educating them now, because what, you know, these people will do to obtain these girls is going to continue to change as more stringent laws are in place.
Mm. Good point, Wendy. Thank you so much. One of the things that I heard Stephanie say, and it struck me, was she said in dealing with this man that she felt safe, she felt loved. And I think that speaks to vulnerability of these girls and even, you know, very young women, and how they're often picked up. Your thoughts about that, Denise?
Well, you're right. And vulnerable women are prime targets for trafficking. And, you know, you heard her say she felt safe. She thought she loved him. I mean, that was all by design, because traffickers do groom their victims. They don't present themselves as what they are. And for a young girl, particularly someone who has been probably, you know her better, but perhaps multiple homes, feeling perhaps a loss of self or sense worth, self-worth rather, these are people who are searching for love. And it's very easy for them to become prey to that individual that gives them that thing that they think they're missing and that they need so much in their lives. So it is something that happens, and the vulnerability is key to that.
I want to ask this of both of you, D.C.'s police chief and the mayor. Have said over the past couple of weeks that the lion's share of the missing girls in D.C., specifically in D.C., of course, are runaways, and most of them return. From your perspective, obviously, you're in Maryland. You're both in Prince George's County. When you're dealing with missing girls in your purview, are most of them runaways? Are they trafficked, or what do you think about that? Because that's really the key to why there's been so much consternation in this area, because communities are saying, well, they're not runaways, they're being snatched. And we spoke about being snatched earlier, and some of them return and they want to be loved. And so what's going on with that, Stacey?
So we actually do a lot of our work in D.C. and we have an office in D.C.
Okay.
And I was at a meeting today. The mayor has created a task force. And so I was at a working group meeting that came out of this task force today to talk about the missing children issue that's come up in the media. And there obviously, yes, there are children that are runaways that also become victims of trafficking, but they're not one and the same. So not every single child that's a runaway is also a victim of trafficking. However, I did ask one of the detectives in the MPD Youth Division how many open cases there are right now for minor cases of sex trafficking, and there's 23 open right now in D.C. So it does happen. As far as missing children go, what Commander Dickerson told us this afternoon is that I believe there's 18 juvenile open cases right now in the district. So, no, that's not a one-to-one, you know, ratio there.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that, too, Denise, because, again, that a lot of people, and we saw that at a huge town hall meeting in Southeast just last week, mm-hmm. where girls are afraid, parents are afraid, and to be quite frank, they are not fully trusting what they're being told mm-hmm. by the administration in the district.
And that's understandable. And I think the society community should be afraid, because it is very alarming. While I agree with you, and of course, these statistics have been verified not just by MPD, but missing and exploited children are also confirming that those numbers are not out of the norm. But I think whenever you have when you see what I'm going to call an epidemic, whether it's normal or not, so many young girls who are missing, it's alarming. And if they're away from home, more than likely they're in very vulnerable situations. And that in and of itself warrants more attention. I think that there should be more effort put forth to address this, to see, you know, what is the cause of this? What are the trends? You know, Stephanie is only one young lady who's been able to come forward and talk about this. But are we actually getting any information from the other girls that are come back? Where have they been? I do think that there is a much higher correlation to trafficking than perhaps what's being reported. It just doesn't happen that all of a sudden you find that these girls are leaving. Mm-hmm. I think it requires a little bit more attention, and I would be worried.
We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of this break. Sex trafficking in the DMV. Yes, it's happening in your backyard. It's happening actually all over the country. Give us a call if you have a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the conversation about sex trafficking. Of course, my guests are Denise McCain, Executive Director of the Family Justice Center in Prince George's County, and Stacey Reimer, Founder and Executive Director of the Amara Legal Center, also in Prince George's County. Lines are still open if you have a question or a comment at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Why is it that black and brown girls seem to be the primary targets? Is it just because we're only looking at it from our backyards, and that if we were in a community where there were fewer black and brown girls, that we would be talking about white girls?
Actually, studies have shown that this issue does disproportionately affect communities of color. And, you know, I don't know all of the reasons for this, but you know, there are certain vulnerabilities that come with increased criminal justice system involvement, increased poverty, increased, you know, involvement with foster care system. And so, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. And, you know, something that I read online recently is that the press is four times more likely to report when a white person goes missing than when someone who is of color goes missing. And so, you know, I'm very, very thankful that this is finally coming to the light, that this is in the media. Maybe there hasn't been a huge uptick, but the awareness is being raised. And so I think that now obviously is the time to act.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, and you were talking about the task force that you know, attended today, and I'm sure you know that up until very recently, the D.C. Police Youth Division had only posted the picture of Relisha Rudd. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then due to a change in policy, as they say, a desire to get the word out, they started posting all of the missing mm-hmm. girls. Mm-hmm. Do you think that helped or hurt?
Honestly, I think that helped. And I talked to Commander Dickerson this afternoon about that, and that was her decision. I believe that's right. What she said. It was her decision to actually start posting these more. And I think that helped. It caused an uproar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she talked about all the statistics over since 2012, the last 5 years. And there hasn't been a huge increase, like I've said, but it's just that increase in awareness.
And anytime I think you find that there's an increase in particularly things related to crime, criminal justice, and the reporting aspect of it, it may be that it appears to be that it's a higher rate, but reporting doesn't necessarily mean it's more. It just means that more people are coming forward talking about it. So I do agree with you. I think that it was a good thing to put that information out there, but perhaps maybe with a little bit more background mm-hmm. as to what had occurred previously in prior years to show that this is not an anomaly, that this is really the norm, that this is something that we're seeing. And in fact, it's even been reported that there's a decline, slight decline this year. So it hasn't necessarily been an increase.
Based on, you know, your experience, Denise, and conversations that perhaps you've had with these girls, what are parents missing?
Well, you know, I think that's a very good good subject to talk about. And I do want to initially dispel a myth, because I think there's also this misperception that parents of young girls who've run away and have perhaps become prey to sex trafficking, they don't care, or they're coming from homes where there isn't a lot of supervision. That's not necessarily the case, because these are oftentimes parents who are working, doing what they do, and just can't be there with their children 24/7, and they unfortunately fall victim to these situations. But I think from the standpoint of what parents should do and can do, I would promote that parent, as a parent myself, we have to be much more engaged with our children, and really just, quite frankly, being nosy, you know, not allowing them to have these social media accounts or computers in their rooms where they're doing things, because that's really one of the main vehicles by which predators will attract their victims, through the internet, through the media. In addition to that, I would also add that we as parents should also know more about who our children are with. I remember back in the day, I'm old school, I couldn't go over to someone's house, let alone spend the night with a friend of mine, unless my mother or father knew who this person was, had spoken to them, and were assured that I was going to be in a safe environment. I think that sometimes parents let their guard down and don't realize that they are setting their children up to be victimized or to become, you know, prey to predators.
And the runaway issue is certainly more common than a lot of people think. I would venture to say that if a girl or a boy, for example, you know, runs away, there's a lot that could happen to them between the time that they run away and perhaps come back, because at any given time, something could happen to them where they do not come back. And you can have mom, dad, perfect, you know, home in the suburbs,
Absolutely.
Dog, cat,
Absolutely.
Private school, whatever you want. But we are talking about adolescents, and I don't think there's anyone at this table or even anyone listening who at some point got mad at your mom or your dad and said, I'm running away because I want to stay up until 10 o'clock and you say it's a school night and I have to go to bed at 8 o'clock.
Absolutely.
And even those small kinds of things could end up being tragic, can't they?
Absolutely. You know, one statistic that I looked up, there's a study done by HHS, actually, and it says that 36% of homeless youth surveyed had traded sex for something of value. And so, yes, when children do go on the street, if they run away from home and they're living in the street economy, there's a high likelihood that they're going to get themselves into a situation that's dangerous. And that might be trading sex, like I mentioned, or some other kind of, you know, form of abuse or exploitation. And, you know, it does happen. And something that I did want to mention is for the parents, it's okay to reach out. I think that there's a lot of stigma around this issue. I think it's something that's hard to talk about. And if your child is struggling, that doesn't mean that you're a bad parent. It doesn't mean that you did something wrong. There are resources. The Family Justice Center is a great resource. And it's just something that we need to start talking about.
And speaking of talking about things, so, you know, from your perspectives, what's the fix? What do we need to do since we can't completely eliminate the criminal element, the traffickers, the, you know, the pimps, the ne'er-do-wells? What do parents need to do? What do girls need to know?
Well, I think education is key, first and foremost. I think that it's incumbent upon schools, businesses, communities at large to be aware of the fact that this is a real issue that's going on, you know, in plain sight. And if you don't recognize it for what it is, you could very easily overlook the situation and perhaps even be complicit in not doing something because you didn't see it for what it was. As was the case with Stephanie, you know, she's, how old was she at the time?
16.
16 was with a 30-year-old man. I mean, you know, that should be a red flag to anyone. You know, there are things that just are not the norm that people should be aware of. So I think we have to do a better job of, again, talking about this subject, making sure that systems that have the opportunity to interface with youth are doing their part by educating them about them. And then other institutions, one of the big ones for me, again, is Department of Social Services. They need to do a much better job. And of course, not all, but I'm speaking in general, to audit and not just give children to foster care parents without making sure that these children are not being abused, because that's why they run away. Mm-hmm. They're in situations that are horrific, and they feel that they could do much better or couldn't do worse on the street than what their situations are in the home. So I think we have to look at this much more broadly and make sure that the proper protections are in place and that we're doing what we can to educate children, communities at large about this issue.
What's the fix legally, Stacey?
Legally, I mean, there's a couple things here. One of the biggest things, this is my, this is always my soapbox, is please don't criminalize the victims of human trafficking. We need to stop arresting the victims of human trafficking. This creates a cycle where these individuals, they cannot get back on their feet. It puts them back on the streets. They have to continue a lot of times in the sex trade because they have a criminal record. So, I mean, that's a huge thing. And then I think also once that happens, the individuals that have been victimized through this will be more willing to work with law enforcement. One of the reasons why traffickers can't get convicted of any crimes is because there's no one there to testify against them. They've threatened their victims. They've told them, if you testify against me, I will hurt you. And so, no, of course, nobody wants to go up there and testify. And with cases like these, it's very hard to bring them forward unless you have an actual witness. And so if we can stop criminalizing the victims, get them into services, get them into a safe place, then, yeah, we might actually be able to move forward on some of these, you know, more high level trafficking prosecutions.
And I would ask, too, because it seems to me that the system looks at trafficking through the lens of prostitution,
which is
much more of a criminal issue for the victim, in this case, the prostitute, which the victim, the sex trafficked person, is perceived as. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's so difficult to get beyond that, because the law is looking at them as a criminal,
a willing participant
in prostitution. And it's really not that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to end this conversation, at least for tonight. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it again. Denise McCain, Stephanie Reimer, thank you both for sharing with us tonight. And I also want to thank Stephanie for her bravery and sitting down and talking with us as well. And certainly we hope that she will continue to move forward and eventually be able to sit here as an advocate.
Absolutely.
And tell that story and help other girls. So thank you both very much.
Thank you, Harold.
Thank you very much.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Thursday, March 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or at Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.